Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbatiany in Washington. Today is Wednesday, October 6th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The UN accuses armed groups in Mozambique of increasing use of child soldiers.
The recruitment and use of children by armed groups destroys families and communities. Children are exposed to incomprehensible levels of violence. They lose their families, they lose their safeties, they lose their ability to go to school.
Guinea's military junta meets with financial directors of all institutions in the country. Nigeria is set to launch Africa's first central bank, supported by a digital currency. Cameroon teachers plead for better protection from attacks by separatists and terrorists. COVID-19 takes a toll on African children with mental health conditions. And Angola's opposition parties unite ahead of the 2022 general elections.
Today in Luanda, Angola's capital, is the very expected launch of United Patriotic Front, including the main opposition party, UNITA, which is led by Abel Chivukuvuku.
And Senegal ranks among the last when it comes to broadband affordability. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. United Nations Children's Fund says armed groups in Mozambique's Cabo Delgado province are increasing their use of child soldiers to fight. As Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva, UNICEF says children as young as five are being abducted and taught to fight.
UNICEF says it is receiving numerous extremely disturbing reports of children being forcefully recruited by the Mozambican militant group Al-Shabaab. It says the group, not affiliated with the Somali insurgency of the same name, has reportedly taken both boys and girls from their families and villages. UNICEF notes there is evidence of sexual violence against girls and of young girls being forced into marriage with their abductors. Human Rights Watch recently said the boys, some as young as 12, are being trained in bases across Cabo Delgado and forced to fight alongside adults against government forces. UNICEF spokesman James Elder says there's no accurate count of the number of children that have been recruited, but it is believed to be in the thousands. He says some of the children have been rescued, but none have been released by their militant captors.
The recruitment and use of children by armed groups destroys families and communities. Children are exposed to incomprehensible levels of violence. They lose their families, they lose their safeties, they lose their ability to go to school. And of course, the recruitment and use of children is a grave violation of international law.
Elder says the recruitment of child soldiers has been going on since Al-Shabaab and other armed groups attacked Cabo Delgado in March. The United Nations reports dozens of people were killed and nearly 40,000 people fled to safer areas in the region. 2 weeks ago, Elder says, UNICEF signed an important memorandum of understanding with the Mozambican Defense Forces. The MOU, he says, spells out what the government forces should do when they encounter children with armed groups.
So that training is very, very important so that they know to treat those children as children and as victims and then immediately get the support of organizations like UNICEF, and that can be everything from health to psychosocial support. Those early stages of support for a child who's been recruited, whether as a helper, whether as someone armed, are absolutely critical.
International law states any child associated with an armed group is to be considered as a child and a survivor of violations. Elder says children who have been associated with armed groups are double victims and must be treated as such. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Opposition political parties in Angola have announced a new platform or a coalition to choose a united candidate to challenge President João Lourenço and the ruling Popular Movement for the Liberation of Angola, MPLA, which has ruled Angola since independence. The new platform, the United Patriot Front, the EPU, has chosen Adalberto Costa Jr. of the main opposition National Union for the Total Independence of Angola, UNITA, as their candidate. Veteran independent Angolan journalist Mario Parvai says the country's constitutional court says it does not recognize the last UNITA Congress where Adalberto Costa was elected.
Today in Luanda, Angola's capital, is the very expected launch of United Patriotic Front, including the main opposition party UNITA, the Praja Party project, which is led by Abel Chivukuvuku, a former UNITA dissident with a strong support amongst people from central and south of Angola, including the capital, and also the small party of the opposition's Bloco Democratico. It's a kind of coalitions taking in account the incoming elections expected in 2022. So this very much is launch of the opposition's front was on one side acclaimed by several sectors of civil society and other parties. But just in the same day, the Constitutional Court, in an unprecedented mood, denied, it means do not recognize, the last results of UNITA Congress, which elected Adalberto Costa Jr. I must underline that the Constitutional Court before has recognized the Congress as legal. So there is a suspicion that just in the same very day when there was happened the launch of the United Opposition Front, so the Constitutional Court do not recognize the last results of UNITA Congress.
How many parties are in this new platform, or would I say coalition?
In this platform, because it's not yet a formal coalition, we have first and foremost UNITA, which is the main opposition party. We have the project Praja Servir Angola, led by Abel Chivukuvuku, which is not yet recognized by the Constitutional Court due to alleged legal requirements. Some saying there is a political obstacle set up by the government due to the wide support of this intended party led by Chivukuvuku. And a third small party, Bloco Democratico, is in this platform. I must underline that the platform calls for what they say is some kind of electoral agreement.
So, Mario, you said that the Constitutional Court has announced that it does not recognize the last Congress of the opposition UNITA, where you said Mr. Costa was elected. So what is the impact on this new platform?
It's huge and severe. Because it means, in reality, that so Adalberto Costa Jr., according to the Constitutional Court, is no longer the UNITA's leader. But this is a huge incongruence, because the same court has already recognized before the results of the UNITA Congress. So some say there is another standing block against the rise of the Patriotic Front from the opposition.
That was Mario Parvai, a veteran independent Angolan journalist, speaking with us from the capital, Luanda. The COVID-19 pandemic is taking its toll, with one in seven young people in sub-Saharan Africa living with a mental condition. This startling statistic is mentioned in UNICEF's flagship report, The State of the World Children 2021. The study, for the first time, looks into the mental health and well-being of children and young people. Reporter Vicky Stark spoke to Joanne Lee, UNICEF's specialist on mental health and psychosocial support for Eastern and Southern Africa.
The report says globally almost 46,000 adolescents die from suicide each year, among the top five causes of death for their age group. UNICEF's Joanne Lee elaborates.
What we do know is that suicide globally and in the region as well is an increasing risk. Both attempted and completed suicide is certainly on the increase from what we know from these statistics. But we've also got to be very cautious about statistics, because we know that those around self-harm and suicide are not always accurate or comprehensive due to a number of reasons, often around stigma and lack of systems to collect those.
She says the most common mental conditions in children in Eastern and Southern Africa are anxiety and depression. Lee says there are a number of contributing factors.
They're often related to the social and economic conditions. Poverty, for example, exposure to toxic stress in early life. And in our region, we have a number of humanitarian and emergency situations, which are all risk factors for mental health. There are other issues such as poor maternal and child nutrition. And again, specifically in our region, we have high rates of adolescent pregnancy, as well as very high rates of HIV, some of the highest in the world.
Lee says during the COVID-19 pandemic, they've seen increased calls to helplines for support. UNICEF has also undertaken polls showing that between 50 and 60% are reporting poor well-being.
What we have noticed as well in the region through our child protection mechanisms is that we are seeing girls in particular getting married younger. We know through our collaborations and partnerships with child helplines that there's an increasing risk of gender-based violence or violence towards children generally due to the pandemic or with children being at home more.
There's also concern that orphans and young people may lose a second caregiver due to the pandemic.
We have a lot of older caregivers in the region. Grandparents, for example, older relatives, older extended family, caring for younger generations due to maybe loss of life of parents through HIV, Ebola, etc. And at the moment, what we're a bit concerned about is that those older generations are the ones most at risk of COVID.
She says in the Africa region, there's a high degree of stigma related to mental health.
We know that there's a lot of use of traditional healthcare practitioners, traditional healers, and this relates to some of the beliefs and cultural understanding of mental health problems being related to spiritual possessions, witchcraft, etc., which is very common throughout the Africa region. So this is something that we find is a challenge.
The UNICEF report calls on governments to make much more funding available to address children's mental health and warns of the economic impact should they fail to do so. This is Vicky Stark for VOA News in Cape Town.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, October 6th. Guinea's military junta on Tuesday met with financial directors of all institutions in the country. Faya Milimuno, the leader of the opposition Liberal Bloc Party in Guinea, says the junta is trying to find out what happened to monies that disappeared from the public coffers during the last 10 years. This comes as the international community is urging coup leader Colonel Mamadi Doumbouya to set a timeline for elections and choose a prime minister to lead the transitional government. Milimuno says the junta has started the search for a prime minister.
Basically, during the last 10 to 11 years, a lot of money from the public coffers disappeared. So the junta is trying to recover that money. They are about to start the audit of the management of the public finances for the last 10 years. They may even go back beyond the last 10 years. Because the way Guinea has been governed is the poorest we can find in the world. So if we have to repair all the economic crime committed against the people of Guinea, we have to go back as far as during Lansana Conte time.
So the ministers of finance that the junta met with, did that include Minister of Finance from Alpha Conde's administration?
It's not the ministers. The junta met with the directors of finance from all the institutions, the government, all the departments, all the institutions. They met with those who are in charge of the administrative and financial management of Guinea, I would say.
Where are we in the transition process, particularly the naming of a prime minister? Where are we?
I think that they are still consulting people. Nobody can say when they will appoint prime minister, but it can be any time from now. On Saturday, many people were saying that the prime minister would be appointed since last Saturday. It didn't happen. It didn't happen on Sunday. It didn't happen yesterday. And yesterday, during on the national television, the journalist had announced a decree to be read on TV. Many people were thinking about probably the appointment of the Prime Minister, but we didn't hear a reading of any decree.
Are there names that are being floated in terms of who might be in the running, the junta might be considering?
There are many names circulating. One of them is Mohamed Bayabogi, and some are talking about Dr. Antoine Sovogi. Some others are talking about Gata Magadi, who used to be one of the ministers during Alpha Conde time, but he had resigned when the constitution was being changed. He didn't agree with that. Some people are talking about him. And also, some people are talking about Mr. Baldi, who used to be the Minister of Higher Education during Latina Conte time, and who also resigned because of the change of the constitution. So there are many names circulating, and so far, nobody can say exactly who may be the next prime minister.
Faye Milimuno is the leader of the opposition Liberal Bloc Party of Guinea. He was speaking with us from the capital, Conakry. Africa's largest economy, Nigeria, is set to launch the continent's first central bank-supported digital currency, the e-Naira. Authorities hope to tap into the popularity of cryptocurrency, better monitor digital currency transactions, and curb black market trading in the paper Naira. The e-Naira is also expected to help integrate millions of Nigerians into banking. But critics say the digital currency will also give Nigeria's central bank more control, as Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
The launch of the Central Bank of Nigeria CBN digital currency, or the e-Naira, was initially scheduled for October 1 as part of activities to mark Nigeria's Independence Day, but was postponed by authorities. The CBN's communications director, Osita Nwanisobi, did not disclose the new launch date in a statement released on the bank's social media handle. But local reports say the e-Naira website recorded more than 1 million hits in the hours ahead of the initial launch, what blockchain experts like Janet Katio say is a welcome development.
It is going to make cross-border payment easier, and it's going to also make it easier for the Naira to be widely used and accepted. So Nigeria is gradually getting to the point where cryptocurrency will be seen as an unstoppable force.
Katio believes the e-Naira will promote blockchain technologies like cryptocurrency, which the central bank authorities banned back in February, citing its volatility and investment risk for citizens. The CBN then promised to provide a safer alternative, the e-Naira. Authorities and experts say the e-Naira will ease monetary transactions and improve long-term value for Nigeria's currency compared to its paper counterpart, which has hit its lowest value since 2003. The CBN also says the e-Naira saves on printing and distribution costs for cash. Digital strategist Daniel Yerima says the e-Naira will also help address money laundering and corruption.
Everything that's built on blockchain is very, very safe and secure. Another thing, again, is it's universal. Part of the benefits they intend to achieve with the e-Naira is the fact that it would be used for both international and local trade, and also it's going to be a tool to fight corruption.
But some experts warn the emergence of the e-Naira will cut off roles played by intermediary banks and give the central bank more control over citizens' financial rights. However, blockchain analyst Jadel Chidi disagrees.
There's a direct link now between the central bank and the individual, you know, or the individual who uses the e-Naira, you know. But that would not put the other banks put them out of business. What I see is that the CBN will eventually create a portal where each user, each e-Naira user, you know, will be able to access the portal and their e-wallet, you know, and through the database they already have with their bank.
In recent years, Nigeria has seen a move toward cryptocurrencies as citizens looked for alternatives to the weakening naira. Now, millions are waiting to see if they can benefit from Nigeria's digital currency. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Senegal ranks among one of the last countries in the world when it comes to the affordability of broadband internet, according to the 2021 Digital Quality of Life study released last week. The country's security also ranked low, although they were number one when it came to broadband growth. Povinas Juna, a research project manager at Surfshark, spoke to Ricky Stryak further about the findings.
For a person who receives an average wage in Senegal, it takes over 7 minutes to afford the cheapest 1 gigabyte of mobile data package and 9.5 hours to afford the lowest broadband internet package. And that's a quite substantial amount of time.
Did your study look into the reasons behind why it's so expensive in Senegal, internet?
No, this was out of the scope of our study, so I couldn't comment what are the reasons.
What is the real life impact of that expensive internet on residents, on their business they might want to launch, on education needs they might have?
The internet affordability, first and foremost, has a negative impact on those who especially have a lower income, because this wouldn't be a problem. Those who are high, they earn more than average. But if you earn average or less, it can be especially damaging. Since the beginning of pandemic, more and more areas of our life migrated to the internet. So it means that limited access to the internet limits our options to study and work online. In the 21st century, remote work becoming more and more popular. You can work for companies which are based, you know, in other countries or in other continents, and you can be hired as the freelancer, regardless of your location. So limited affordability, limited access to the internet basically damage both economic and social development. It limits your access to maybe streaming TV or movies, even connecting with your friends and relatives who are living further. So it is quite damaging.
The silver lining to talk about as well is that according to your report, Senegal's broadband speed growth is the fastest in the world?
Senegal occupies the first place in the world by the broadband growth. So it basically, it shows that situation is improving quite rapidly. And this is I think, there's a lot to celebrate, because the country is in this perspective on a right path. Of course, there is still a lot of room for improvement because by broadband speed, it's only 86th in the world.
You know, there are a wide swath of people who really only use WhatsApp and Facebook. You know, how does an outage like that maybe have an impact, or is there a lot of dependency on these messaging services for connectivity in places like Senegal?
We as a society are becoming more and more dependable on various internet services and accessing various aspects of our common life via internet. And in some cases, that could be a basic, we are dependent on basic infrastructure. So as you said, accessing broadband or mobile speed, but in many other cases, some internet giants are very much important in our lives, whether that would be a Facebook or Google or Microsoft, or this type of shortages, as it happened, only shows that we need to take this kind of thing seriously, and we sort of have to become a bit more prepared what might happen if one services or one aspect of infrastructure fails.
That was Povinas Junas, a research project manager at Surfshark. You're speaking with Ricky Stryer from Lithuania. And that's it for this Wednesday, October 6th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all our engineers, I'm James Barton in Washington saying, have a lovely day.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.